The reason people aren't financially free is they don't know what to do and they don't know where to start. I want you to join Joey and I at the Virtual Inner Circle Live, April the 4th through the 6th, as we share with you the exact answers to those questions. We only do this event one time per year. I don't want you to miss out. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter promo code podcast. When you're at this event, you're going to get your investor DNA. You're going to get access to up to 6 different passive income strategies. So you know, leaving this event, exactly what to do, taking our decades of knowledge so that you can start becoming financially free. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter the promo code podcast.
Stallion, today's podcast, as we talk about family banking, kind of thinking, how do we fund a child's life? Lots of things came up in this, but look, you and I were dumb kids. We made lots of mistakes, and I think I want to learn from that, but also know that my kids need to be involved in the discussion.
Well, I mean, what better way for them to learn than while you're with them? Like, I think that's one of the major flaws we actually pulled out of this interview from the roundtable, is that so many families don't ever spend the time learning with their kids or helping them to learn about money while they're under their roof and showing them a system that they can use and implement. And then what happens after that?
Well, they're on their own. I think sometimes as parents, we remember how stupid our kids were when they were kids. It's like, that's the kid who stuck a crayon up his nose, right? Yeah. I don't think I want to give that kid money.
Yeah.
That's like, they were 6.
Yeah.
Right?
Cut them a break.
If you judge them based upon the things that they did when they were 7 or 8, when they're 20 and 28, that's not fair.
No. In fact, I think it's a marathon, right? I think that's another thing that came out of this show for me, is thinking about, man, money in a family is a marathon game. It's not you and I individually in a race, all separate. We're all on the same team, but it's a really long race.
Do you though think that you are saying we are on the same team? I believe that there's so many families operating in competition with each other.
Oh, no doubt.
They believe that it is. I mean, I've had a parent not too long ago tell me, look, I know that you are doing that this way in your family, but I just got back from a funeral and the kids are not in agreement about anything. They're actually in disagreement about a lot of stuff. There's even some hate there and they're just not going to like each other. You just can't assume that your kids are always going to do it this way. And I was like, wait a second. Where does that stem from? Like, why is
that? That's a symptom.
Yeah, I do. Exactly. When they are not involved in the discussions, when there's this competition constantly, and I'm the most competitive out there, but we're not trying to win this game against them. We're actually trying to win with them.
Yeah, that's a great point. And to your point, there are symptoms that reveal the fact that there really was no financial base. There was no foundation that the family built together. And so you shouldn't expect there to be agreement. There's nothing tying them together.
Well, so, you know, Megan and I and the family went out to Utah and spent some time like going through this entrusted process. And in that, we were determining what our family's core values were. And through that, we revealed that creativity, experience, faith, generosity, loyalty, those were the 5 defining characteristics that our family was going to have. Well, it's one thing to say it. It's one thing to go through that process. But then it's, how are we going to back that up? What are the things that we're going to put in place for our family from this day going forward? And when we're not here, our kids, as they're interacting with the money, hopefully that we've been able to build and the processes and the businesses, that they will use those 5 core values to define how they work together and with money in the future.
Well, the key there was those core values weren't things that you came up with and told the family, this is what we're about. You did it together. You already set that foundation, and it wasn't like dollars and cents. It was, these are the things that are going to define the way we make decisions as a family.
And how we will aspire to be better. What will we look at? Because money is just one part of the wealth. It's really just the tool. It's the is the way we buy goods and services. That's what wealth is. And the education that comes with that is much more important.
Well, and by the way, if you're listening to this and you're like, wait a minute, I thought we were talking about like funding kids' colleges and cars and weddings. We absolutely are talking about that today. But here's the thing that you're going to find, just like I did, is when you start this whole process of infinite banking and you start thinking about the immense cost of life, about all those things, you're going to say, I got to fund a policy or a system of policies at a much higher level than I've ever thought was necessary. But beyond that, it becomes the function or the system by which you then create this legacy that I'm so proud of you guys for going and building all those core values as a family and starting that whole process. But that's where this really leads to. So start with those costs and then say, man, this system is going to be, it's going to be with us for a lifetime or beyond. And we're excited for you to go along that journey with us.
All right. If you're not already, go to wealthaboutwallstreet.com/innercircle. The discussion after this podcast, I would say Joey was even better than the podcast itself. We had a lot of fun in the podcast, a lot of good nuggets. But man, the Q&A that just kept coming, we went over our 30 minutes usually that we have. We kept going because the questions were there. You get actually to take part in those discussions when you're an Inner Circle member. You get access to these coaches every single week. You get the insider knowledge that is just not able to be given on the podcast when you're a member of the Inner Circle. There is a 7-day free trial. So if you go to wealthwallstreet.com/innercircle, you can take part in that. Now, let's get to the interview and let's belly up.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome into the IBC Roundtable, where each week we go deep into your favorite subject. I am the idea guy, Russ Morgan. I am sitting around the table with the best coaches in the infinite banking world. And I want to talk to them and I want to introduce you to them right now. To my right, my co-host, my business partner, the man that we refer to as the Italian Stallion. He's got a license plate to prove it, Mr. Joey Murray. What's up, Joey?
Hey, hey. Glad to be here. Glad to have a great subject matter to share with everybody today.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about kids. I mean, I think you and I probably have the biggest bill ahead, but funding my child's life.
Yeah. This is the one thing, Joey, that you have beat me in. Kids.
You just got to keep trying.
You have conquered that one and you got out to a lead and I will not catch you.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me win that one.
All right. Well, the newly married man to our right, the Indiana Jones of finance, Mr. Downtown Ernie Brown. How are you today, Ernie?
I'm great, Russ. Glad to be here.
All right. So question of the day.
Sounds excited to be here, really.
Joey has 5 kids. I have 4. Have you guys been discussing the number of brown kids that will happen?
No kids, no problems.
No kids, no problems? I'm okay with you guys not having kids yet, but I'm just wondering, like, is it going to be a Duggar family or is it going to be, you know, 2 kids and a dog kind of thing?
I have no idea, Russ, to be honest. Mm. It is a conversation on the table.
Ernie is so wise, man. He's just not even going to take your bait.
I'm just watching him, just trying to see if I can. I'm just seeing if I can get him here.
That door is shut.
Well, I mean, for your sake, and you know, for a healthy marriage, I hope it's open, you know? Hope is open.
It's on the table, but that door is shut.
All right, the man between two bamboo, our resident pilot, the guy that can get you home safely financially, the Gooch, Mark Carr Gucci. What's up, Mark?
Not much, guys. We're here. It must mean it's Thursday. Let's do this.
It is. Technically, for those listening, it is Tuesday. But we do record this on Thursday because we've got to prepare for Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm. Now, our last but not least coach, the man with the million-dollar smile, Mr. Incredible, JD Hill. What's up, JD?
Not a whole lot. I am curious. We're all men here on the show, at least. Does anybody else, when you go shopping, do you mannequin shop?
I've never bought a mannequin in my life.
Yeah. You walk into the store and you like the way the mannequin is set up and you're like, I'll take that outfit.
I've done that.
Because that's how I do it. I'm an efficient shopper. I hate shopping. And I got given a hard time today about my double collar. And I'm like, this is what was on the mannequin. And I like the way it looked. And so I decided to wear it. And I like it.
You do have that kind of Ryan Gosling, crazy stupid love. What was that movie with him and Steve Carell in it? Like where he basically had him wearing like 14 shirts.
That's right. Are you the billionaire owner of Apple? Are you Steve Jobs?
Well, I mean, we're talking kids today, and there's no doubt that JD is going to have a kid sighting at some point in his backdrop. So I love that. I hope that maybe we have, you know, a live kid that we get to get into the shot. Well, we're not just talking about kids for any purpose, though. This is something that is near and dear to our heart because we want to teach generational wealth. True?
No doubt.
And when we're talking about how to fund my child's life, that could mean a lot of things to a lot of people. So, JD, I'm going to let you start this one. What's the first thought that comes to mind?
I think about actually putting IBC policies on my kids to teach them how to manage their finances.
Okay. Earn, what's the first thought that comes to your mind?
This is a long time ago. Somebody told me or I read somewhere that it costs on average $250,000 to raise a kid. And I thought then, and I still think now, that's a lot of money.
that was before they started printing dollars.
Yeah. All right, Mark, initial take.
My mind goes to braces, school, car, clothes, and I just remember shoes. Shoes, yes. Because they barely fit and it was time for a new pair. And I, you know what? Thank goodness my parents didn't make me go around barefoot. So
there you go. In Alabama, they say that barefoot is okay or is expected, maybe. Maybe not okay, but expected.
So you guys weren't the guys that your dad was like, hey, you'll grow into these. They're about three sizes too big. You're like, Dad, these are like scuba shoes.
These
like,
are these 11 are, and a half.
These are flippers. Okay.
I'm in the third grade.
It's like, you can wear my penny loafers. Just stick some socks in the bottom of them.
Hey, if you did not rock your dad's no hassle tassels, I mean, like, were you really putting his shoes on is the question.
Oh my goodness. See, I didn't even get to wear my dad's because my parents were divorced. So I was rocking my mom's white Reeboks. I mean, it was a sad day around the house. Tie dye shirt and some white Reeboks. Hyper color shirt at that.
Man,
Joey, what comes to
that's a good picture.
I got one for you. I'll share that picture with you at some point. Tell me what comes to your mind when you think about funding your child's life.
I think this was literally one of the first things that even kind of brought me into the infinite banking world was I was thinking about, at the time, I only had two girls. And I was thinking, man, just paying for college, I got to find a good way to do that. And the 529 plan seemed like a joke. It didn't meet any of the criteria that I would have wanted. And so I heard this and I was like, makes a lot of sense for college savings. But then I also remember applying what Nelson said in his, the first couple times I heard him, he said, you have to solve for finance in your life. Your need for finance is so much greater than your need for death benefit. And at the time I was like, yeah, you know what? He's right. Like buying cars, all those things that you mentioned, Mark, like braces and college and weddings and weddings and since then weddings and weddings and weddings. And I started thinking, I got to fund a massive amount of cash into this policy. And I had a $2 million term policy at the time. when I started putting over $60,000 a year into policies and solving for that finance kind of piece, I ended up with over $3 million of death benefit. And that, of course, has been climbing ever since. But that's the thing that comes to my mind, is how many dollars are going to have to flow through my system just to pay for, you know, Ernie, I'm sorry to tell you, the $250,000, that's a steal.
Going up. Like,
sign up for whoever said that was the cost.
Amen. That's right. They got the first part of the wedding taken care of. I don't know where the rest of my life's going. Hey, here's the thing. I think that I'm going to try to incorporate into my girls' weddings. This is going to become a sales event. Like, we're going to have to like sign people up for something while they're there.
Listen, immediately after the service, we're gonna put on a little presentation here.
I mean, I need to be able to write something. Stay off. Seated. Somebody's gonna have to, you know, buy something to help produce some income for this deal.
Dwelling unit rental, whatever.
Exactly. Hey, I think we need to host this event at the house. Like, oh, you want to have this sentimental, you know, like show where I grew up? Yeah, exactly. And I can write that thing, you know, I can have the business write a check to our personally, because it keeps underneath the 14 days of rental unit. Yeah.
I mean, this was a wedding reception.
I love that. I mean, you got to have that. Well, here's the thought that comes to my mind is, I remember many years ago reading a book by Dwayne Brunell, The Path to Financial Peace of Mind.
Yep. Great book.
And when going through that and just seeing each step of the way, that kind of detailed, okay, here's how he, when he went through it, the example he used was buying the first car for his daughter, then using it to help fund some college expenses, ultimately paying off college when she got out. Using it for a wedding, then using it for their own personal passive income steps, then being able to then, once they pass, leaving that to the child, and the child being able to create their own passive income stream.
And it was all based off of him funding a policy on his daughter.
Exactly. Right. Okay. I just remember that as a really vivid kind of example. And it just led, obviously, when I was reading that almost, I don't know, 9 years ago, my oldest was six. And so I was trying to like, and his daughter in the book was eight. And so I was starting to think, oh, I can do that. So I, you know, immediately went and started a policy on Alexandria, and then on Cade, and then Betsy, and then ultimately on Ryan. And so that was helpful to me to kind of have that as kind of a clear picture.
No, I love that book, because it, to me, is almost like whenever I read Nelson's book and saw the car example, that really made the whole concept make sense. Then to see his book and applying it to kids, it just, like you said, it just kind of lays out the plan. You're like, oh, well, that's easy. I could do that too.
Well, I think though there lies a challenge, right? That we have always have to overcome. So there's a really interesting goal, right? That we would plan either for our current children or children that we may have in the future. And for anybody who doesn't have children, you want to support ours, I'll gladly accept your money. That we need help with that $250,000 Ernie was talking about. So what are some of those just challenges that come to your mind that you can think of that people might face by trying to fund their child's life?
First thing I think of is, it's the same problem we talk about on this show all the time, is the number one kind of obstacle to financial freedom is the same thing that's a challenge for funding your kids' future or even their current livelihood, is access to cash. People have knowingly or unknowingly or unwillingly kind of followed a default plan that is separating them from their cash and putting into qualified plans, putting into equity in their home, putting into excess payments on debts. All these things are constantly stealing dollars away from your own access. And so then people get to even college age or buying cars or all these things we mentioned, and they're forced to go put them on debt or forced to go and say, well, we'll just get this Parent PLUS loan, the student loan with you, and we'll work something out. Like, they if they had access to capital the whole time, they would have been easily able to accomplish all these things, but they just been following a default plan that didn't put them in that control factor.
Ernie, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I just think about there's a few families in our church will go over to the house. They've got kids. And I mean, you got kids in the house. I'm seeing what it's like in there. It's chaos. it's mayhem. And I hear you guys talk about what you do with your kids on the weekends, and it's just crazy busy. Yeah. And I think that keeps people, and I can see this, keeps people from really thinking way down the road, just kind of thinking about what's the next week, what's the next week, what's the next week. Thinking about kids going to college. Oh, we got to buy a car. Oh, they're leaving the house. That emotional kind of piece too. Mm. But from the beginning, looking way down the line and dreaming, we've got an opportunity here, Joey. I agree. What if we had access to lots of cash? What if we position our kids to have access to cash? What kind of decisions could they be making if we spent this time really teaching and bringing kids along in, what are you doing with money? What is dad doing with money? What decisions are mom and dad making about their money? And just thinking way down the line, I really think it's a huge opportunity if you can have that vision amidst the busyness. And it really creates an opportunity, I think, for family stewardship.
Oh, I love that. And I want to come back to that because I got some points on that, I think.
Okay. I've heard enough about infinite banking. I'm pretty sure it's a fit for me and my family, Russ. How do I get started?
Let's take that pretty sure and make it darn sure. Reason you do that is that you get clarity, Joe. You need to get on a 15-minute call with one of our coaches at wealthwallstreet.com/free call.
Then you'll know where you're starting from and where you're headed. And only then can you implement the infinite banking process.
All right. So go to wealthwallstreet.com/free call to get that 15-minute conversation, gain clarity. But now let's jump back into today's episode.
JD, what do you think some of the challenges facing parents thinking through this subject matter?
Well, you know, we're a product of our own experiences, right? And, you know, outside of being exposed to these types of things, it's tough to then instill those things into our children. And, you know, so unless you take the time yourself, you know, to be on this podcast or to do research or to be around other people that are doing things, that are having success financially, I think the challenge is just experience in and of itself, is not having that experience and then not being able to then instill that into your kids. And, you know, I know for me, like I didn't grow up, you know, with a very affluent family. I didn't grow up having learned about finance. I learned that it was okay to spend money, right? And I did that successfully. And then I was very fortunate to marry a wife who also does that successfully, right? And, you know, and so there it is. You got it. You know, but I think, you know, the reality is that, you know, IBC is in funding your kids' lives is, to me, you know, because I've got three boys, is it allows me to be so much more intentional with them, right? In how we make financial decisions. You know, and so I agree with Ernie, it's a great opportunity to be able to teach your kids something different.
Well, I think, you know, the opportunity to engage with our parents and us to be able to engage with our kids is important. Joey, you said it a lot of times on our show that people operate in silos when it comes to their finances. It's taboo to talk about money in the family. It's taboo to ask a parent to take a loan because that's not what we do. Now, there's got to be a defining line between loans and gifts.
That's right.
99% of the loans that people are nervous about talking about or giving to family members are gifts. Right.
I'd say 99.3.
Well, we were reading, Joey and I are kind of starting to reread The Richest Man of Babylon. And it was kind of referring to the people you lend money to desire the money, but have the ability to pay it back, meaning that you're lending it against something with collateral.
Yeah.
Right. So when somebody says, hey, I want to buy a business, they show you the business and all the assets and say, I would like to take a loan to buy this business, just like a bank is not going to give you an uncollateralized loan for $1 million. It's just not going to do it. Right. So you shouldn't do that in family either. So if someone in your family is getting a loan, it needs to be collateralized. Now, there are times where kids make mistakes. I've been one of them. And we've come to our parents and said, hey, we need your help. Now, we may accidentally or unintentionally use the word loan in there, right? But let's just be clear. Everybody knows this isn't coming back, right? I'm giving this money to help. And if I'm bridging a gap, just, you know, I sit on the mercy committee for our church. There's times where we're trying to bridge a gap, get somebody from one place to the next. Giving money can be merciful in that situation. There's also times where it's not going to bridge a gap. It's only going to delay the inevitable. So giving them money is actually a bad idea. You know, like, you're not going to help them in that. Helping, maybe the most merciful thing we can do sometimes with our kids and anybody else is to let them suffer the pain of that thing and figure it out.
No doubt. Right. No doubt.
Now, with that in mind, though, I want to talk a little bit, Mark, because we've had some discussions about this. And how do you see this playing out? Conversations with parents starting to talk about money. How do all these things work in your world?
Growing up, for me, money was not something we talked about. Whether that was a family decision or a cultural decision. But for me growing up, you know, in Hawaii, money was not something you talked about. And I think a lot of it too was that we didn't have the trust and the responsibility to be careful with that information. Because you don't want to talk about money and then just go start blabbing to everybody how much your parents make, because that's not how this thing works. But now, as time has progressed, you know, now that we're adults, the conversation is there, and it's really nice to be able to have these open conversations of, you know, hey, you know, here's a financial scenario. Let's talk about that. You know, okay, what are the pros? What are the cons? What are the things we can do? And how can we maybe manipulate this scenario to bring the banking function inside the family? So that now any of that interest, any of that expense, if you will, if it stays in the family, well, then to me, it doesn't bother me how much it is. Like I entered into a loan scenario with another family member, and I said, look, I'm going to eat it on this one. I'll eat the interest cost, but it's going to keep that amount of capital within the family. So if an emergency ever happens, you just call me, I'll unleash the capital to you. But now we don't have to go beg a bank for it. We don't have to try and qualify for it. We don't have to deal with whatever the external rules are. The only rule we have is, you know, our family dynamic and the agreement that we made at the start, which is if you need that money, call me, I'll give it right back.
Well, so this is for many people, I think probably tuning in to listen to this episode, they're thinking, okay, how does this apply to my kids? And they're most likely not in their 60s, 70s, or 80s. And if you are, man, hallelujah, I'm loving that you listen to our show. But listening to most of the people who are calling in, telling us, hey, listen to the show, they're thinking about college-age kids, teenage kids, middle school kids, right? And the discussions we're having right now are applying more to us as adult kids. And I think that we all never, as we kind of said, we didn't have these discussions with our parents because money, for whatever reason, whether it didn't exist or it was taboo or cultural or whatever for us to talk about it, we didn't. But we have the ability to change it. I mean, the fact that we are breaking free of the mindset of Wall Street, and I think one of those mindsets is, and we had a guy that we were interviewing yesterday, like verbalize this, right? Whenever he said, about, you know, his money being put into like a 401k IRA, he forgot that it even existed.
Yeah.
It was like it even didn't exist. I think it was something like the words that he said. And I feel like this is something we do need to talk about. Like the being able to get into these discussions with our children. If you listen to Joey and I have the interviews with our oldest daughters about money, it's amazing. Their little brain starting to conceptualize ideas of how money works, and it becomes more normal for us to talk about it.
Yeah, they're applying these ideas in their own way at this stage in life. But what I love about the whole concept of infinite banking is exactly what you said, JD, and it's going to grow over time. And we obviously have not experienced this in its fullness yet, but I feel like at each kind of layer or level of our kids' growth, we can introduce this as a system, right, that the family owns and operates. And Russ, I know you've been learning some different things about the trust side of things and how to set up your legacy that will outlive you by generations. But I even think about the here and now, that if we had been taught this kind of thing, we would be having conversations at a whole different level with our parents at this stage. But the good news is right now, if you're listening to this, you are in position to become that patriarch, matriarch of your family that sets the system up and then educates. I mean, at this point, I'm educating my parents on it and my kids simultaneously. And we're able to now look at it much, much broader and say, wait a minute. Well, you got money over here. Why are you doing that? Well, this is just what we've always done. And we've never had these conversations before. I'm talking about with my parents. And they're like, well, what should I do? And I'm like, well, you know, we can do this thing together. Like, I can help you to get a better return and simultaneously build the passive income streams that we're trying to build. So it just becomes a conversation that people are like, oh, well, I didn't even think about that. And you're in position to be the difference maker, that you don't have to say, oh, woe is me, I wish I'd grown up with this. Now you're that person, and you can, like I said, you can lead from both sides.
Well, I think you might be the child in this funding the child's life, right? Like, you may be the initiator of that. Ernie, as we start to wrap up, because obviously we want to go into the inner circle. We want to have a lot of discussion, even go through maybe in a case study example on this. What final thoughts do you have?
Well, it's making me just think forward. What do I want for my family? And I just imagine sitting around the dinner table, just sharing with the kids, this is what we've got going on. We want to tell you about these things. What questions do you have? What ideas do you have? And as they get older, them coming back and sharing ideas of things that they want to do and be in a position where we could fund that for them. And having rules set in place. And if we need to get trusts involved, what longer term to protect that and create some guidance. And I think that's all possible here.
That's Mark, great.
What's your final thoughts on?
My thought is, as we try to wrap our head around how can I utilize this to fund those things that would come up in a kid's life, my thought is, if you have looked at long-term rentals or even your own house or your car, right, there are going to be expenses that come up for that along the way. How are you planning for those expenses? Are you just taking dollars and putting it in a checking account and just letting it sit there, do nothing for you? Or could you just as easily say, you know what, rather than putting that 50, 60, 100 bucks or whatever into the bank and let it do nothing, could I direct some or all of that into a policy, have that policy grow? When that moment arises, anywhere from 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever the time horizon is, think of like a water heater going out in your house. It's going to happen at some point. Your kids are going to need some expense. Couldn't you put those dollars to work today, let it grow, and then leverage against it in the future to manage that? But what did you get along the way? You got all those other benefits that go with that system.
Love it. JD?
Yeah, I think there's been some amazing insights and things that have been shared. I know for me, I've got three young boys. I'm behind you guys, you know, but between the three of us, we have enough kids for everybody, right? But for me, it just makes me really appreciate how, when we talk to people about how making financial decisions with IBC, how it forces you to be intentional and very active in that decision-making process on those financial decisions, when you incorporate that with your kids, that translates over and transfers over the same way. So I can, like I said before, be very intentional rather than reactive or passive when I'm teaching my kids about making financial decisions. And for me, I just think being engaged in that financial literacy, if you will, is so important to teach my kids, because I know for a fact that's not something they're going to learn. And what they are going to learn in the real world is going to be antithetical to what we're actually teaching them, which is how to actually get to freedom rather than to be in bondage.
No, what you said a lot there was how we teach them. And if you think back, we watched and observed our parents do things with money. And a lot of that is how we react. But most likely, for many of us, there was not a whole lot of actual teaching. This is what you do. And today, What are people being taught to do with money for kids? Where are they taught to put money?
529
plan. 529 plan, right? The first thing that you can think of that you would have a need to save for, invest for, whatever it is college for your child. So how active is the child in that first investment?
Zero.
Zero. How active is the parent in that first investment for the child?
Zero.
Yeah, it is literally, they're just flipping money out of their account every single month to this thing. They get a statement. They don't understand what the statement is. They put it in a drawer and they move on. There's no education that happens there. What I love about our clients who are buying insurance policies on their kids and constantly, like every time, I love it when I get the call, hey, by the way, my wife's pregnant. Tell me again how old the kid has to be before I get a policy. Like that, I just love that concept, because what that's telling me is they're starting to think about how quickly can I engage my child in this process. Because as soon as I took a policy loan out to buy my daughter's car, she immediately then was involved in the discussion, right? Oh, we're going to take a policy loan to buy your first short-term rental. Okay, here's what that looks like. So now she's asking me questions. How much money did my unit make last month? She's sitting in the meeting with our short-term rental operator. Show me how much money my unit made.
Show me the money.
That is engagement. Well, then we went and sat down with some estate attorneys, and they were involved in the discussion. We talked about what is our family's core values? What is important to us? What is going to be the purpose in which we value these assets? And then we're going to meet regularly to discuss that. I think them having experience being around attorneys, being around real estate people, being around accountants, being around finance people. Like, I love it when our clients want to engage their kids in the process, because they're going to experience at some point in the future. And if it's the first time, think about how nervous and scary that is. The first time I ever sat down with a financial person, my wife had gotten $10,000 from her grandfather. He was kind of preparing, and he just started sending all the grandkids $10,000. Now, $10,000, when we got that check, it was like, it might as well have been $1 million. And we went and sat down with a financial person, like, I don't know what we do with all this money.
Yeah, you
know?
I'm sure he hadn't seen checks that big in yeah. a long time.
Like, I know that, you know, like, don't let him know that, you know, there's no more where that came from, but just pretend, right? I mean, but we were scared. Like, we didn't know what to do with it. I'd never been prepared for that. I'd never sat down with a financial person and had those discussions. How much can we do for our kids by teaching them? And here's one last thing I'll say about this, is sometimes I hear parents who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, who have acquired a lot of money and will not spend it all, right? And they don't want to do what we're talking about. They don't want to do the family banking thing. They don't want to invest in the businesses of the kids. They don't want to do lending with the kids. They don't want to get the kids involved because they're like, I just don't think they'll know how to do it. I'm like, okay, great. So your strategy then is not to educate them why you can, why you're here. Obviously, you did an amazing job acquiring the money, right? There's so many lessons and wisdom in you acquiring it that you're going to wait till you die. Then they're going to get it, and you have no ability to input their decision-making from that point forward.
How's that going to work out?
Exactly. It's the most retarded thing. Now, I get if they think, oh, well, hey, there's a certain amount of money that I may need, so I need to keep this off to the side. But for everyone who has more than that number, like, get the kids involved right then. I'm not saying give it to them so they can go buy Lambos, right? This isn't like, oh man, nice. We got some money, you know, now it's an opportunity for us to splurge. I'm saying, like, get them involved and be a part of the investment discussion with them. Help them with the wisdom. If they're going to listen to this podcast and they're going to take advantage of a new opportunity they've heard here, be involved in that decision-making. Give that wisdom. So if this is, you're listening to this and you go, I've got a parent who needs to hear this, please share this, because I think there's so much opportunity as family members for us to take and insulate ourselves from the financial markets, because things are going to get crazy. I just letting you know, things about to get crazy in the world if they're not already crazy. And the more we can insulate ourselves from the world by doing business internally, the better off we're going to be. Final shot.
No doubt. I think you did a great job just kind of tying this up with a bow. We are about to jump into the inner circle, though. And in that inner circle, we're going to go deep into a case study. And you're not going to want to miss that. So if you're not already a part of the inner circle, you're going to miss this live, but you can always go back and listen to the recording. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/inner circle. And we'd love to have you a part of this conversation going forward.
All right. As always, thank you so much for listening. Have an amazing day.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.